Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 10 of Coalition Victory. We've made it 10 episodes so far, and we're still going strong. I'm your host, John Walls, and I have with me today some of the members of Team Victory, as usual. We have Toops. Oh, wait. We don't have Toops, as usual. We have Ford.
Evening's Internet.
And Jamie's here.
Hey, everybody.
And that's it. Skeleton Crew. That's all we have with us tonight. So, I don't know about you guys. I have not played much Magic recently. Jamie, what about you?
I've been pretty light on the Magic as well. Just FNM for the last 2 weeks. That's all I got here.
Ford, what about you? Have you been playing?
No, not that much. We had the end of my quarter for work the last week or so. But I played with a few of the standard decks that are running around town right now. The mono green aggro that showed up over the weekend. Rug monsters. And for me, I guess I'll say testing Esper, because I haven't played with any type of control deck in my history of Magic, and I'm finally deciding to try one.
It's fun, isn't it?
I really have to say it is, and I really hate myself for saying that.
You feel so different about Magic after running control. Mm-hmm. It's like a completely different game.
Yeah. Yeah. Casting Sphinx's Revelation finally kind of feels good, though.
Card's really good.
I know a better card.
What?
Thoughtseize.
Thoughtseize is really fun. Yes.
That's like the best card ever printed. I love that thing.
Cabal Therapy.
I could cast Thoughtseize in my black deck. Yeah. I've cast it multiple times.
You can cast it in your control deck as well. Thoughtseize is literally in any deck with black.
Fair enough.
So I did not get to play Magic. I have not played Magic since the last cast.
No, but what have you been playing?
Diablo 3. It's good. Go buy it if you don't have it.
The expansion, by the way.
Yeah.
That's what he's referring to.
I did open a bunch of Modern Masters. I ended up stopping by our shop, Victory Comics, last Friday. And they had a brand new box of Modern Masters out. And Jamie and I pack-warred one pack, which I won with an Aether Vial. And then was able to free roll that, sold it right back to the store because I already have a playset, and ended up getting, I think it was $180 worth of packs at $20 a piece.
Wait, the packs are $20 a piece?
Yeah.
No. The packs were $20 a piece. We already opened two of his boxes.
Yeah. But I only ended up paying, I think, $100 for all of my packs. All my rares I opened, I sold back to the store because I already had them. I was basically just trying to see if I got a Goyf or a Bob. It was fun. It was worth it. It was dumb, but sometimes you just got to open Modern Masters.
Okay.
I mean, this is kind of like a fad that a lot of people do, especially like the pro players. They just love to open packs, and who doesn't? I love to open packs too. So you just open packs, spend money, and sell back all your rares, and you end up losing money. But sometimes you open up something cool, and you get that, you know, you get that edge off of, like, wow, what's in the pack? It's fun.
We had a whole group doing it, so the box collectively, I didn't buy the whole box myself, but we had a couple people. So with every pack opened, everyone was like, oh, was there a mythic? At the end, we were like, oh, there's got to be a mythic left in here somewhere, you know. So that, especially in a smaller box like that, it was just really fun. So I had a good time doing that.
So who opened the highest value card?
There was a foil Blood Moon somebody else opened in the same pack as a regular Blood Moon. Huh. So, but
yeah, we didn't see like the Goyf or the Bob.
There were
odd in two boxes.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, that's variation.
Yeah, I mean, I opened my Modern Masters. I think I had one Bob in the boxes. So.
Yeah. So.
Which I
traded. Well, let's move on from Bob. He's no fun.
Yeah, fair enough.
He's not what you came to listen for this week, is it?
Right. You guys probably came to hear about Standard. And if you didn't, sorry.
We're still going
to
talk about it.
We're still going to talk about it because there was a lot of Standard played this weekend. Starting out with Grand Prix Phoenix. which was won by Robert Burney, playing Mono Black Control. Not Control. Mono Black. Sorry, I've got Control on the brain.
After I mean, Mono Black is a sort of Control deck.
Pseudo-Control.
So, there were 3 Mono Black decks in the top 8, which is pretty crazy. Only one of them had the lovely Staff of the Death Magus that we saw from the Grand Prix last weekend in Beijing, or the weekend before from Beijing. The new sideboard card that we're seeing from a couple of the Mono Black lists happened to be Farika's Cure, which makes a lot of sense.
Returned sideboard card.
Yeah. Jamie, do you want to...
That's a good point for it. It's not necessarily new technology, but I think they've been decreasing over time. Yeah. There's been less Freakus Cure, and it's good to see them back. The Death Magus is kind of, you know, the Asian events always have some weird technology in different metagames, so we were kind of interested to see what would happen if people would kind of pick that up, if the burn decks would still be out in force. I know a lot of people are very behind them, so. But Freakus Cure is kind of a better choice, I think, because it serves a good role. It hits creatures, it removes creatures. There's not many creatures in the burn deck, but it hits all of them, including the Mutavaults, the Phoenixes, and the Ash Zealots. So that's good. And I mean, in worst case scenario, it's something you can cast if you have one of your creatures in play. Like, it kills a decent number of your own creatures, but some of your creatures can survive it. So it's not always a dead card, even if they don't have their creatures. So I kind of like it. And it's really good against the rest of the aggro decks in the field. And if you look at the standard decks, the aggro decks seem to be coming out a lot more recently. Yeah. Aggro seems to be getting more and more popular.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, it's also, I mean, it disappeared when the green, red, and Jund monsters started to show up is why it sort of disappeared, because it really did not interact with that deck well at all from the sideboard. So, but with the aggro decks, like Jamie was talking about, coming back bit by bit, it's becoming essential to have something that gains you life that you need against those incredibly fast starts they can have, or the multitudes of Burning Tree emissary starts that can have that can just blow out some decks.
Yeah, I know, like Toops was saying last week, or was it the week before? It all kind of blurs together, but running, burn at the Invitational, it does seem to be coming, more and more prevalent. It looks like, I think the only thing out of kind of the top 8 here at the Grand Prix that I know I wanted to talk about was Ifro's list, which was running Blood Crypts splashing for red, which allowed him to get Rakdos Return out of the board. I personally really like that. I know Rakdos Return was one of the pillars of the format in Last Standard for Jund, and it's kind of fallen out of favor just because Thoughtseize is a card. It's kind of hard to hold a Rakdos Return in your hand and not have it get Thoughtseize at some point during the game. So
another thing about Rakdos Return as well, in the black decks, you're not really ramping and getting ahead of your opponent like Jund kind of did. I mean, Farseek was a hell of a card. Allowed you to ramp early and really just get out ahead. And as soon as you had more mana than they had cards, which happened pretty early in the game, you're just like, here we go. Let's reset your hand and do you some damage. And I will top deck a lot better than you will because my deck is just 20 mythics or something. Like, just ridiculously powerful, high-powered cards.
I mean, to a limited extent, doesn't Sire of Insanity do the same thing if you can ramp it out there?
It does, and was it this event that had the Jund Monster deck lists?
I saw that in, I watched a little bit of the Star City.
Yeah, this one has 2 Jund Monsters. So at the GP too, I'm seeing a lot more Sire of Insanity out of the Jund Monster decks. So I like that too. I love Sire of Insanity as a card. And I'm glad that he's getting some face time again. Obviously, he's not a major part of the strategy. Let's see. They were running, one or two in each of the
decks. Looks about right from what I'm seeing.
But it's main board, so, I mean, there's 3 in Will Levin's deck, 1 main board. And the other guy was running, let's see.
I see one in the main deck and one in the board.
One main, one side. So, I mean, that's good technology. It's a lot harder to stick than it used to be. Like, within Jund, you at least had the Cavern, so, like, it was inevitable. Yeah. The control deck just couldn't do anything about it. So now it's kind of like you have to position it well, but like every deck in Jund Monsters is a huge threat to the control deck. So they have to have the right answer at the right time. And that's what you got to do against control decks is put pressure on them and make them always have the answer.
And also I think the other thing that's starting to come back in those mono black decks is Whip of Erebus, which we see in the main two of them from the GP, which I've always thought is a great card and was wondering why it even rotated out, but I'm glad to see it coming back strong.
Did you run the Whip a lot in black-white? Because I haven't... I don't like running it main board. I've never
run
it main board, because like, with the amount of removal you're running, sometimes you just have these creature light hands.
I mean, again, my black-white deck is a little bit tweaked from that. I don't run the rats, so I run one Whip main. And it works really well, especially with the Obsidats that I'm running main. I mean, just the basically immortal Obsidats you can generate off those things mm-hmm. when you can win you games. I mean, and a one of, it doesn't show up a lot, but when it shows up, it's usually a card that they are forced to deal with one way or another. I mean, Esper, the control decks always try to Detention Spirit, and none of the other decks can really handle it main, and then with the aggro deck showing up again, like I was talking about a few minutes ago, and larger force, it also helps against those.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. The lifelink seems really, really relevant nowadays, especially when, you know, just bringing one creature back from the graveyard once with it and getting, I mean, in this deck, everything has at least, you know, two power, right? Except for Pack Rat, but...
Yeah.
I mean, if you ever get to...
If you have, like, extra mana to just generate more rats off of it is what I would do with that.
Exactly. I mean, if you can ever, you know, get a Desecration Demon through in the sky on this, you're gaining 6 life, you're dealing 6 to them, and it's a great card. So I like seeing it coming back in the main.
Desecration Demon does work coming back. I mean, Blood Baron, if you're playing against Black-White, will just get through all their defenses and can finish you the game you need. Right. And then if you're not playing against black-white or black decks, Lifebane Zombie can also get through all their defenses and finish off games if you're just out of reach.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I like to whip a lot more when you're either mono-black, so you have the Gray Merchants, or you're running more Obsidats, which has been a trend in black-white with all the Esper control rising up.
Yeah.
There's another point to bring up here. We don't see much of the Esper control anymore. In fact, in this, we don't see any of them cracking the top 8. And that may be because of the rise in the aggro that we are talking about. Like, that's the kind of decks that are putting the pressure on the Esper decks. So it's like the metagame is going in a little circle here. You know, we had Jund monsters, green-red monsters for a little while, and Esper control for a couple weeks, and now we're seeing a lot more of just the aggro-y decks and the black devotion decks, which have been there pretty much every week. They're one of the few decks that have been, you know, always up there.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, we're also seeing the mono blue splash white is starting to come back also a little bit.
Yeah, mono blue is one of those decks that a lot of people kind of think has just not been good or well positioned, but yeah, every week we see one or two cracking into top 8s, top 16s. So it's still a deck you need to prepare for and know how to play against. And yeah. The addition of white for Detention Spheres is a pretty nice addition.
Yeah, and it's easy splash.
Low risk.
Do.
Yeah, very low risk splash.
Yeah. And I mean, like what you were saying with the cycle, I kind of, at least in my mind, I think that's what Wizard wants, is that sort of rock-paper-scissors cycle in the metagame, where one deck beats another, but another deck beats that, and then...
Well, anybody who's played in the Cobble eras knows what the opposite is like, and
I know that
everyone loving Cobble decks, the tournament popularity drops considerably, and so... Yeah, Wizards would definitely like more decks out there. This is probably a good segue into the other events
that
we saw. over the weekend in standard. What do you got there? John, what do you got for us?
So there was a Star City Open this weekend in Milwaukee, and that was won by Mono Black Devotion as well. So we see Mono Black here taking first in Star City and then Grand Prix this week and the Grand Prix last week. So Mono Black is kind of coming back, I think. But like Jamie was saying a little bit about the diversity of this format, looking at the top eight from the Star City Standard, there's not one deck in here that's the same as another deck in here, and that's a really roundabout way of saying that it's a really diverse format right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we go to the top eight, but we can even go farther down to the top 16, and we start to see even more decks. We start to see a little bit overlap. I think the only two in the top 16 that overlap that I can see here is there's two Mono Blue Devotions, two Naya Aggros. There's a Naya Hexproof, which is just a completely different Naya aggro deck. And you've got two burns, but one of them is running black. And I haven't really looked at that list to see what they're running the black for. But I'm guessing Rakdos Return?
I'll check. Yeah.
Let me see what they got. What is their one black card? So it looks more like a regular. I don't know why it says black. There's two Read the Bones in the sideboard.
Yeah.
And, Trouble and Toil in the mainboard. So... yeah, so it's basically, so you've got Burn overlapping basically, Naya Aggro overlapping basically, and Blue Devotion. That's three decks that match the other decks in the top 16. So, yeah, we're talking about some pretty heavy diversity. We see some unique decks we haven't seen before, such as Mono Green Aggro, which Ford alluded to earlier. What else do we have that's a little unique here? We do have a green-black dredge deck that I know Arylax finally cracked high up, and I know Conley Woods was working on it for a while.
Yeah.
So that deck's, you know, people like that deck. I personally like that deck, but it hasn't been – it's not like a top-tier deck, but it's still got the it's got the goods to make it there.
It's close.
And we see a white-black humans deck as well. Which runs a bunch of humans. It's more of an aggro deck, so we've got the Zathard Necromancer, a bunch of different humans. So, you know, we've got so many different decks, but a lot of them fit into the mid-range category. A lot of them fit into the aggro category, and we only have, I think, two real control decks in the entire list, one Esper and one Blue-White Control.
Yeah, and I'd like to say something about just the diversity of stuff when we're talking about the second place Adrian Sullivan's Blue-White Control. There are at least six one-ofs in that deck that haven't really seen play in any other deck.
There's 11 total.
11 total one-of. Well, some of these have been seen before. That was like Elixir.
Oh, yeah.
Shows up. I was kind of referring to ones like I think they've got Debtor's Pulpit is one of...
Yeah, that's in the board. I've seen that in a board once or twice, but it's really weird to me.
The board is weird, like all one-offs.
One-off, but I mean, it's something that will completely lock down Aetherlink, which is something that control decks need to do. And actually, going over the list, there's only one card that I have a real question of, and maybe one of you guys can answer this. It has a Disperse in the main, and I'm just thinking Voyage's End would be just a straight upgrade on that.
Not necessarily. It says return target non-land permanent, and the permanent part really jumped out at me when I saw this because I was a little shocked by it too. I'm not sure exactly which permanent like he wants to bounce, if any, or if it's just that it's such a versatile card that he included it. Because I was thinking like Far and Away would also be just pretty much a straight upgrade.
I want to jump in on that and say it could be, in my first guess, it should be another Cyclonic Rift, because Cyclonic Rift can also bounce non-land permanents like Planeswalkers and enchantments. But the only distinction and the difference, rather, is that Cyclonic Rift can only target things that you don't control. So you can't use it to bounce your Jace at one to reset him, or bounce an Elspeth to reset her. Or, you know, do something like that. Maybe is there? I was thinking, what's the one mana artifact that lets you name something? I don't know if he's running that.
Pithing Needle.
Yeah. Like, if maybe in some weird scenario you need to bounce a pithing needle. But who knows?
Well, you can bounce your opponent and activate your ability for one turn.
Yeah.
If you needed to.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was just kind of, once you mentioned that, it's kind of pretty, it's a pretty, you know, big difference between the two cards. So it's almost like it's a removal spell and a counter spell at the same time. Like, you can use it for whatever he needs it to. And that's why it being a one drop is probably okay. Like, it's useful in a lot of different situations, and there's a lot of neat tricks that you can use to outplay your opponent. But at the same time, like, the opportunity cost of running one of them is not, like, that big when it when, like, you can't find a good use for it.
It's a two-drop, same as Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah.
You're right. It's exactly the same, but it can return your own things. And I think, like you said, I mean, like, for, like, when your opponent goes to kill your Jace or your Elspeth, you can just counter it and replay it. Like, that's some pretty huge tempo swing. Like,
yeah, I mean, I kind of just wanted to point that out to show that there's still some sideboard tech out there that hasn't, that obviously can make it into the top that hasn't really been seen before. So, I mean, after, I mean, we're getting in close to the point where the next set's coming out, and we're still seeing new stuff get played. So it shows that there's a lot of, I guess, depth is the word I'm looking for this format.
Yeah.
You got to be careful with these one-of decks, though. They're really good, like, when you really, really know your deck and really, really know, like, how to outplay people.
Right, but...
I personally just, when I see these decks with, like, 20 one-ofs, like, I'm like, yeah, I just can't. It's very hard to play a deck like that.
Yeah, but from what I was hearing during the coverage, he has been working with this style of a deck for a long time, and he knows.
Oh, yeah. Like, Adrian Sullivan knows what he's doing, and he's played with these style of decks before. I was just wanted to, like, kind of put it as a disclaimer. Like, don't just go and copy a deck with, like, 20 one-ofs and then be like, well, what is this in here for? Like, you know why every card is in your deck. And if you have cards for a certain situation, you want to play more of them, usually. Like, it takes a lot of skill and familiarity to run, like, a list with, like, 20 one-ofs.
Yep. And the other fun deck that I just had to make after I saw it is the mono-green aggro deck. You look at the list at this thing, and it's mainly draft commons and uncommons.
If Toots were here, he would be having a fit right now.
It's a good thing we left him in some other state.
Yeah, state. Well, we don't actually know where he is. He could honestly be in another country. Yeah. He could be in Canada. He could be in Mexico. He could be that shiny object that popped up on that picture of Mars that's been all over the internet. We just don't know where he is.
I think the main point of that, though, is that no matter where, is that this green deck is just... he's gonna hate it. Yep. I, as a longtime fan of playing the color green, I look at it and I'm just kind of, I don't know. I don't like it. I personally don't like it.
Well, the thing is, it's different than, like, the player who I guess most people who pay attention to Magic know who plays a lot of green is Kibler, and this is nothing close to any of the decks he's been making for green.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think I was listening to the deck tech, and like, some of the sideboard cards are in here just because he had no idea what to do with that extra space. So that's why Bramble Crush is in here.
Bramble Crush a lot. I've been trying to make a green deck with that.
I think he would have preferred the Sky Reaping, the green devotion deals damage to flyers. But it's a fun deck that has a bunch of commons, like Brush Strider, and uncommons Experiment 1, and Colonian Tusker in there, and it gets work done fast, and it just survives stuff with its mending touch.
So it's basically for people who don't know what some of these draft commons are, because you've not played draft before. It's basically a mono green stompy list. It's running, you know, traditional things like three threes for two, you know, double green, You've got brushed riders for one in a green that are 3/1 vigilant for two. So you're basically running creatures that are 2 and 3 power for about the 2 mana kind of cost. It has a couple tricks, like Slaughterhorn. Like you were saying, it's another common that you're playing. It's a blood rush creature that gives +3 for one. So it's running giant growth type effects with that. And then, as Ford was saying, something like Mending Touch to save your creatures to regenerate them. So it's just kind of like a play your things and hope for the best kind of deck, which reminds me a lot of Naya Blitz from, I believe it was last cycle of Standard, which was just kind of this same idea of you play your 1, 2, and 3 drops as fast as you can, you turn them sideways, and you hope your opponent doesn't play like a 4 or 5 drop that just trumps everything. I don't know how this deck could beat a fast Blood Baron. I guess it has not one of Nylea, which gives the creatures.
Well, I mean, you also have trample. That these things could actually block Blood Baron and just trade with it if they wanted to.
Yeah, the major problem with this is that if you try to block with your Blood Baron, like, if they just happen to have, you know, the Slaughterhorn, Ranger's Guile, a Boonsader that they can flash in, like, there's a lot of ways, like, that can go wrong for you, and they've already done a lot of damage to you at that point, so, like, trading with your Blood Baron's only going to stop, like, a few attacks. This thing is just cheap creatures. I don't understand why they're running 23 lands. I guess they consider the 4 Mutavaults as really creatures and not lands. That's how it works out. Does the deck even need a Nylea? I mean, I guess it's only a one of, but
I like it as a top end, as because Nylea can pump everything if it needs pump what's not blocked.
It's also a creature because a lot of the things are going to have at least one green symbol. Yeah. So if you're getting to that point, you're probably going to have Devotion.
See, I feel like if it's a creature, you're winning that game already.
Yes.
And if it's not a creature, you're losing that game. So I don't see how Nylea helps either of those two situations that much. Like, so that's kind of why, and it's like 4 mana to pump, and so this deck's not really going to have that much mana available, I feel like. Of course, I haven't played it, but it just seems like one Nylea just seems kind
of
weird.
I prefer the one of Bo.
And Nylea has, I had Nylea out once, and like Jamie said, I was already winning the game. But, I mean, the thing is, I think it is when you play Nylea, you're kind of supposed to have, your hand's supposed to be empty of everything, and it's just basically using your mana now at this turn to pump whatever creatures you aren't blocked or get through with Nylea. That's kind of how I've been playing it.
Yeah.
It's only a one-off, so it's probably okay. I just feel like that's the card that really jumps out as like not fitting in with the general strategy.
Yep. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, because it's something that can survive Wrath and pump Mutavaults, which is...
I guess it also gives your creatures trample, which, when they're so high power, may be fairly relevant against other creature decks.
Yep. I mean, it's interesting. It will probably, for the next week or so in the metagame, it will show up a lot on the lower things just because it's so cheap and different and probably easy to build in some ways. Whether or not it will make it into the top 8 or top 16 anytime soon is going to... I do not think it will. Well, I could probably make top 16 again, but I don't
know. So, I mean, looking at a lot of these decks, I'm starting to think about using Drown in Sorrow again. Like, I think it might be time for the sideboards of Mono Black and Black White to get some Drown in Sorrows, because this looks like it would make this deck fairly miserable. It can't wipe everything, but it does a pretty good job.
Sorry, I keep forgetting which one Drown in Sorrow.
So Drown in Sorrow is the current Black Wrath that we have available to us. Black 1, all creatures get -2/-2.
Okay.
And like it looks like I said, with the influx of aggro and little creatures that are 2/2s, it may be time to put a few of those in your sideboard just in case. Because this deck, if this deck gets a decent draw, like 1/1ing it isn't going to work. Especially if Burning Tree draws. So this deck gets its free wins like the old Naya Blitz did with, oh, look, I drew 2 to 3 Burning Tree Emissaries and something to play with the extra mana. So they can put like three or four creatures into play on turn two sometimes, and yeah, that's tough to win no matter what deck you are. Turn one,
it's awful. Yeah.
So what else did we got kicking around here that was kind of interesting? Anything else?
I think that was most of the new interesting standard stuff.
Yeah. There's not much else to learn from this tournament because, like I said, there was like one of basically everything. Yeah. I mean, seeing the green-black dredge deck was really interesting because I love that style, sort of style of deck.
I may have to try that deck out. It looks pretty
sweet. Personal.
It's fun. Tubes hates it.
I tried it for a while. It's really tough to beat a lot of decks. Like, there's just draws that are horrible with it, and like a little bit of removal and you're done.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the point with the why Lotleth Troll, and I think Bestow Creatures works well with this.
Oh, Lotleth Troll is by far one of the all-stars of this deck. Like,
so, I mean, I've been playing this against this a lot when I've been in my Jund Monsters or Green-Red Monsters deck, and that just has a horrible time with this thing, with this deck. Because if it doesn't get a Scavenging Ooze out on time, then this deck can kind of just overwhelm it.
This deck is fun, though. I love this deck. It's like Junk Reanimator, similar sort of deck, and that's what I played last Standard, and I just love graveyard decks, which is kind of why I'm buying a Legacy Reanimator deck. But we won't go into my monetary troubles quite yet.
But we might go into Legacy, so...
I'd love that. I like Legacy. I haven't played any Legacy, but I did get to watch a bunch of the Legacy Open that happened this weekend as well in Milwaukee. Again, Star City had the Open there. I got to watch it while playing Diablo, so I literally got the best of both worlds. I got to play video games while watching Legacy. It was awesome. It was won by a Delver deck, because Delver is probably one of the best one-drops in Legacy. I'm gonna jump out on that limb. I know it's a real, real risky thing to say, but it's
and every other format that it's ever been in.
Popper.
It was standard. There are plenty
Popper,
of people
standard when he was around.
There are people who will say Lightning Bolt is the best one drop. I'm sure.
Ooh, this would be a great debate for another day.
Lightning Bolt doesn't pitch to Force of Will.
I never said I could defend it. I'm just saying people would say it.
Yeah. So that I think that is a good discussion for another podcast. We'll definitely have to we'll bring that one back up. So I said it was won by Delver. Yes, I did. Four color Delver by Eric Rill. It was not four color Delver is what Star City put on here because it's a Delver deck that has four colors in it. But to me, it looks like a blue-red Delver list that runs, you know, normal Delver cards, and then Young Pyromancer and Lightning Bolt for red. But then it also has a black and a green kind of splash, and that's going to give cards like Deathrite Shaman. He's running a one of Edric Spymaster, which I know I didn't really know what it did. I had to look it up. But it reads that whenever a creature deals combat damage to one of your opponents, its controller gets to draw a card. So that seems like it would play really good with Young Pyromancer, especially if you have a bunch of creatures that are going to be swinging and attacking. You're going to get to draw a bunch of cards off of that and live in Magic Happy Christmas Land for a lot longer. the black and the green provided a little bit more in his sideboard, the more I look into it. You got cards like Life from the Loam and Cabal Therapy. Cabal Therapy is absolute bonkers with Young Pyromancer. It lets you, especially with Gitaxian Probe that the deck runs four of. Gitaxian Probe lets you see their hand for no mana. You draw a card. Then you can Cabal Therapy them, name the card in their hand that threatens you most, get rid of it, make a 1/1 token with the Young Pyromancer, and then sacrifice that token to flashback Cabal Therapy, take the second most threat card, and then you get your 1/1 back. So it just seemed really good over the weekend. It seems like he's probably been working on this for a while. It seemed really tuned. I kind of like it. I don't know how the mana bases worked out for him. I mean, all of the duels, I believe, are blue.
He won, so
yeah.
That tells you how the mana base worked out for him.
Right. He came through a top 8 that was pretty standard for the most part for Legacy. You've got Bug Delver showing up more and more. We see Blue-White-Red Delver not in the top 8, which is kind of what I've been saying, that I don't think Blue-White-Red Delver might be the best colors for Delver. I think Bug is probably a little bit better. But then you've got Sneak and Show coming back, taking second and third. And I know Jamie and I both kind of looked at each other for the Sneak and Show list, and we were wondering about Jace. I know, Jamie, I think you were saying you did a little bit of research on that.
I did do a little bit of research on it. I'm really interested in this topic because a lot of the reanimator decks that I've looked at too happen to have two Jaces in the sideboard. And I happen to own two Jaces. So that makes me happy. but in all seriousness, no. I know Sneak and Show did it for a while. Our friend Brock, who's been on the cast a few times, loves this Sneak and Show deck. And I do remember when I first started getting into Legacy that he had Jaces in the board. And he mentioned something about bringing them in, particularly in the mirror match. So I did some research, I did some thinking, and that's one of the major uses of the Jaces, is because when Sneak and Show comes up against Sneak and Show, you can no longer show and tell. Because when you show and tell, you both put into play your Emrakuls, and then you have to pass the turn, and you basically gave their Emrakul haste. It's not exactly a good way to win a game. So you got to stop going with Sneak and Show. I mean, the show and tell part, and you go with the sneak attack part, where you pay your one red and whatever to put the enchantment in play. You pay the one red to put the Emrakul into play with haste. And they don't get an Emrakul, only you get an Emrakul. So it's much better. So you're playing a more control matchup, and that's where Jace shines, is in the longer, grindier control games. And so instead of trying to race to 3 mana, you're trying to race to 4 mana for your Jace. And I believe the sneak attacks are also 4 mana as well. Is that correct?
Yes. 3 in a row.
Yeah, sneak attacks. So the race is like, you know, 1 mana doesn't seem like a big deal. But when your mana base is based off of like Lotus Petals and 2 mana lands like City of Traders, getting to 4 is a little bit harder than getting to 3. So, you know, you're playing the longer game. And Jace allows you to brainstorm every turn, which is pretty good. Allows you to get the cards you need to play your sneak attack, have your Emrakul in your hand, and have the Force of Will, Misdirections, etc. to kind of back it up.
I'm going to kind of go back to something that Toops brought up in the cast where we talked about the Invitational, where he ran Sneak and Show. I personally think Sneak and Show is a really good match against Delver. Yeah, Delver is going to have a bunch of counter spells, but those are going to be conditional counter spells for the most part. I mean, the Eric Rills list was running Stifles. I don't know if the Bug Delvers have been running Stifles. I know some of them have been moving away from it, but it seems like Jamie was saying, a lot of your mana ramp is going to allow you to get stuff out pretty quick. So I think that's really good against Delver, because they're going to play a Delver on turn one that you're just not going to care about, because if you have your handful of, you know, threats, if you're playing a Jace on turn three, if they don't counter that, their Delver's not going to stay in play, and you're going to get the brainstorm every turn. And then the next turn or two, they play a Delver, and then you're playing an Emrakul. It just doesn't hurt that much. So I kind of agree that, you know, Sneak and Show is probably good when all these Delver decks are there. I know a lot of people are afraid to play combo when Delver is really strong because they see all the counter spells, but you can beat counter spells. That happens. We also see an Ant deck in the top 8, which...
Now there's a deck that loves to beat counter spells.
Yeah. And then, you know, you've got the exact opposite end of the spectrum of a deck that doesn't care at all about counter spells with Manaless Dredge. And I shake my head every time I see Manaless Dredge in the top 8. It's one of those decks, it kind of just checks everybody. If you don't have your sideboard and you don't know how to play against it, you're probably going to lose. It's a kind of a gimmicky deck, and it can have free wins, but it can also have free losses. I know I've been playing Blue-White-Red for a while, and resolving a Rest in Peace against Manaless Dredge is game over. They just can't beat it. And we see this again in the top 8 in the first round, where I don't remember who he got paired up against, but it was a fair deck that had access to... what's it called? Nile Spellbomb. That, you know, just blows up the whole graveyard. And it's something where I could see it getting into a top 8 pretty easy, where if you know how to play it, you know the tricks, you're going to catch people off guard with it, you're going to get some free wins with it, and if you get a little bit of luck, you can top 8 with it. But I don't know if it's something that can actually win a tournament, because in your top 8, you're going to have Delvers. You're going to have, you know, Sneak and Shows. If you somehow get paired up against the decks that are not that and are not running counter spells, or, you know, not running Graveyard Hate in the sideboard, you're going to probably spike the tournament. But odds are in a top 8, you're going to run into one of those. And once again, we see that in the top 8 here. And it just looked unwinnable for the Manaless Dredge. So,
who was his opponent in the first round? Yeah, I don't have the information.
It was one of the Delver players. I don't remember. I don't think it was Eric Rill.
I'm looking at some of these deck lists in the top 8, and the amount of Graveyard Hate they have is actually not, like...
It actually might have been...
It's not jumping out to me as, like, wow, it's oppressive that he could never win. But, yeah, like, they will have some Graveyard Hate, but still, the amount of slots in a Legacy tournament, again, going back to the diversity, this is a very diverse, like, top 16 for Legacy. And Legacy is a very diverse format. You never know what you're going to play against. So not many people waste that many slots on Graveyard Hate, because Monolith Dredge isn't, like, top 8. Like you said, it's not spiking every tournament. So, like, it's the type of deck that, like, you can just get on a run, get a few good matchups, and you just dodge all that Graveyard Hate.
I mean, looking, like you were saying, the diversity, we see combo decks, there's Elves, Affinity, Lands comes back again. All of these in the top 16, I think we only see Sneak and Show being the only thing that kind of stands up there with Delver.
I mean, you see the same culprits again. You have a Dead Guy Ale deck in there. That's something I haven't seen in a list in, like, forever. Affinity cracked the top 16. Affinity does that every once in a while, but it's not, like, a every week deck. Lands was popular for a little while. Now it's, you know, we only see one. You see a Painted Stone, which always kind of gets in there. There's a Tess with the Ant, very similar Storm decks. One Death and Taxes. So it's a very diverse list again, which I like. There's even a Bug Control deck, which I found kind of interesting. So basically it's similar to, like, Shardless Bug used to be, but it's not running Shardless Agents. Instead, it's running everyone's favorite creature, True Name Nemesis. So I thought that was neat that, like, the Shardless... I think I've heard this from people talking about it, is that basically Shardless Agent is not the card anymore, and True Name Nemesis has kind of taken its place as the oppressive threat that he can be sometimes.
I believe now that I'm looking at the list, the Bug Control might have been the list that the Manaless Dredge player had to play against in the first round.
Yeah, I see at his sideboard, one Surgical Extraction in the sideboard for that. What is Gol? Is Golgari Charm doing anything in the graveyard? I don't think so. Nope.
No, but he did have,
like, three pieces.
Yeah, he did have the stuff he needed when he needed it, and it let him just completely demolish. I think it was.
And I mean, that's how Legacy goes sometimes. Like, there are powerful cards in Legacy, and there are powerful cards that stop strategies, and sometimes they just have it.
Yeah, this was definitely the list. I'm seeing the Maelstrom Pulse. I remember seeing three Narc Amoebas come down on the Manaless Dredge side, which kind of looked very threatening in the air, because looking at this control list, there's not many flyers, but the Bug Control player didn't care about three Narc Amoebas because he was stuck on one land, and as soon as he hit his third land, he just Maelstrom Pulsed them away, which blows up a non-land permanent and everything with the same name as it. So it just blew him right away.
Yeah, the three Narcomoebas at the same time is usually more scary when they can, like, Dread Return in the same turn and kill you with the Flayer, or just put in some giant Golgari Grave Trolls, like, something that's actually, like, a real threat. Like, three damage a turn. Yeah, that'll allow you to get to three lands and blow them up.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's enough Legacy talk. I know I'd sit here and talk about it all day.
Poor Ford. He always gets left out when we move on to Legacy.
It's fine. I find it interesting. I've been looking at the list, and one thing, I mean, I was looking at the Affinity list just because I've watched Walls play the deck, or modern version of it, a lot, and so I recognize a lot of the cards. No idea why Ashen Rider's in the sideboard of that.
Sneak and show. So when they play Show and Tell, you both get to put a creature into play.
Okay.
And you just hope you have your guy in your hand. Okay. Play Sneak and show, so that way you... It comes in, it triggers, it blows up their Emrakul, and then you've got an Ashen Rider, and they've got nothing.
Gotcha.
And it's something that, like, I remember Goblins used to do with the old version of Ashen Rider, which was the Angel, but I forgot her name. Basically, like, one mana cheaper and destroyed something when it came into play, but not when it died.
Angel of Despair, yeah.
Yeah, I know Goblin decks used to do it. It's, like, something that, like, the Sneak and Show players sometimes won't see coming. But you're boarding in, like, two cards into your 60-card deck to kind of mulligan to an unplayable card. And then if they don't cast Show and Tell, you just got a dead card in your hand and you had a mulligan to get it, maybe. You know, it's kind of cute. It's like when I play Storm and I put a Crocus in my sideboard. I really hate it, but sometimes that Crocus wins you a game, so I still do it.
I think I'm going to get us out of Legacy Land. I could keep going on, especially
yeah,
that
give
there.
Ford something to talk about.
Thanks. I'm fine.
Ford, let's talk about new Magic cards.
Yes!
It's been...
All right, some excitement in this podcast. Gone, I love it.
This is why everyone actually tuned into the podcast. Not the standard recap, not the Legacy, but our opinions of the 25... or probably less than that, cards that have been spoiled for Journey into Nyx.
The number is 25, but it'll be a lot more by the time you guys hear this.
Fair enough. We're not going to talk about all 25 of them, though, because Scryfish is just stupid.
Scryfish is cool. So Journey into Nyx comes out, what, the end of this month?
Yeah, end of April is the pre-release.
So
it actually comes out the beginning of next month.
Right. So we started getting spoilers on Monday. We record this on Tuesday, so we've had 2 full days of spoilers. It already looks like there's some new mechanics that they're bringing out, kind of really big mechanics for the last set in this block. The first off is Constellation.
Which is a really odd name, I'm just going to say. But
I mean, it makes sense with the
theme-wise,
like,
it makes sense. Yeah, theme-wise, it makes sense.
Right.
Just
when you hear the thing like Constellation, I agree. Like, it matches the enchantment creatures, but it doesn't make you think of what the ability does, which we'll get to in a second.
Jamie, why don't you say what the ability does? Let's let's read one of the cards that Jamie and I instantly jumped on, which was Eidolon of Blossoms.
So this is a great segue from Legacy, as there is a deck that uses creatures very similar to this, and some of you people who remember the old creatures in the early days of Magic known as Enchantresses will instantly understand what this card does, but I'll read it here. So it's an enchantment creature, which is something we've been getting a lot of. It costs 2 green and 2 colorless, and it's a 2/2. So right at the start, we're behind the curve, so this thing better do something awesome. So it has the Constellation keyword, which is actually not a very good keyword, because while it does, I'll explain, it does kind of tie in, all the creatures do the same thing, but they all do something different. So this one says, whenever Eidolon of Blossoms or another enchantment, which is a very important part right there, enters the battlefield under your control, you get to draw a card, which is basically what all the old enchantresses did. They all said, whenever you play an enchantment, you may draw a card. So basically, Constellation says whenever the creature with Constellation enters the battlefield or another enchantment, you get to do whatever their ability is. In this case, this is the most exciting one so far, because drawing a card is always awesome.
Yes. So that was the first one that we kind of saw that Jamie and I have been waiting.
And the art is really good too.
I'm pretty sure this is the first part I actually saw spoiled.
Yes, and that's the only one that matters to me. But the other ones, the other mechanic is Strive, which we're seeing on the Ajani card. So Ajani has been.
That's the only one we've seen it on.
Yeah, we've been hinted at Ajani in this set. So we have Ajani's presence for a white, and it's an instant. It reads, any number of target creatures get 1/1 and indestructible until the end of turn. Now, the wording on that's a little bit weird for a one mana spell because of Strive. So Strive is an extra cost from the looks of it. It costs an extra certain amount of mana. In Ajani's presence case, it costs 2 and a white extra to cast it on a target beyond the first. So if you want to target one creature with it, it's going to cost you 1. If you want to target two creatures with it, you're going to pay 1 and then 1 Strive cost of 2 and a white, so it would be 2 white-white. If you want to target 3, you add another 2 white to that. So it kind of scales up as your army grows, and it allows you to kind of be okay with flooding out late game because it makes sure your 1 mana instant to protect your guy early just crazy in the late game. So.
And another sign that a Johnny will show up at some point.
Hopefully.
Not just from this, the leaked images that came like 9 months ago.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's on the card pack. We now feel pretty confident saying a Johnny will be in this block.
So the next kind of cycle we'll talk about is the Dictate cycle. Jamie, do you want to touch on those?
Alright, so we have the Dictate cycle, and the Dictates are from the gods. So I don't know how many they're going to do. We only have 2 spoiled at this moment. They're both monocolored. So we'll go with this first one, which is another tie back to an old card. Some of you may be familiar with Howling Mine or similar cards, where basically each player draws an extra card. Well, our first one is Krufix's Dictate. So it has a really cool art of Krufix on it. And it's 2 blue and 1 other. It's an enchantment, and it has Flash, which is pretty cool. And it's basically a Howling Mine. It says at the beginning of each player's draw step, that player draws an additional card. Now, Howling Mine was an artifact, and one of the major problems with it was that when you played it, your opponent got the first card from it. But with this enchantment, you actually get to play it with Flash, so you can play it on your opponent's turn, and you get to start off with the first free card. So that's a pretty neat upgrade over Howling Mine. Of course, it's blue instead of an artifact, so you only play it in your blue decks. But it's also an enchantment, and that's something important to keep in mind with Constellation, which we just talked about. So you can flash this in, and you trigger all your Constellation creatures, which I think in Limited that's just going to be a huge blowout. Like, repeatable ETB effects have always been strong, so that's pretty cool. We also have another one in red, spoiled. It also has Flash. It costs 2 red and 3 others. And it says if a source would deal damage to a permanent or player, it deals double that damage to that permanent or player instead. This card is going to blow people out so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's a good card, but like, there's going to be that person who's just holding it, and you're going to be like, you attacked with a 3/3. All right, I'm going to let it through. They're going to pump it, play this, and you're just going to be dead from, like, 20 life.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're going to hate your life, too.
Plus, it's got some nice art on it. You get to see the twin gods, Mogus and Irois, duking it out over a city.
Yeah, and so this does lead a question about how the cycle is going to go, because obviously this is a red card, but it's representing 2 gods dictating instead of just 1 as we saw in the previous card. And it's important to note that the blue card is from Krufix, who's supposed to be blue-green. And in this case, the red card is from the red-black and the red-white god. So I have a feeling we're only going to get 5 of these. I don't know if they're going to put multiple gods on some of the other ones. Who knows? But I wonder if they're all going to be flashback things, too. Because, like, Dictate of the Twin Gods is basically An effect that's been on red cards for a very long time, ever since, I think, like, Tempest Cycle. I can't remember the card now. John, come on, you love old cards.
I'm actually looking.
I'm trying to think of what the first one was. I know it's got the Weatherlight. Oh, Furnace of Wrath. The Weatherlight flying through the Furnace of Wrath.
Oh, I actually have that card.
Yeah, so, like, that's also a red effect. That's at least another red enchantment, so... you know, the Howling Mind was actually an artifact. So I wonder if, like, the rest of them will also be, like, effects we saw on iconic Magic cards in the past. But who knows?
That'd
just speculation
cool.
at this point.
So the red one is including Iroas, which is one of the new gods that they've already spoiled.
Yep.
Ford, do you want to... I know you...
Sure. I'm kind of a fan of the gods, all the gods. Well, except Karametra. I can't get behind Karametra.
Nobody can.
But Iroas, the god of victory, is 2, a red and a white, with 7/4 normal god stuff, indestructible as long as devotion to a red or white is less than 7. Iroas is not a creature. And then it's got its 2 abilities with creatures you can't... Creatures you control can't be blocked except by 2 or more creatures, and prevent all damage that would be dealt to attacking creatures you control. One of the reasons, though, I like this card so far, just I've seen for the minor gods of Theros, is that it's got a casting cost of 4, which I think is the cheapest of any of the minor gods.
I'd have to check, but it's definitely strong. It's a 7/4 for 4 mana if you have the devotion.
And it's in red-white, and which immediately brings up Boros Reckoner comes to mind as a red-white card that would probably like to have to be blocked by 2 or more creatures.
Oh,
I mean, it's
got
a little wombo combo-esque stuff with it since.
See, does that work? Because it says prevent all damage that would be dealt to it.
It doesn't work. The preventing the damage doesn't... Boros Reckoner won't redirect, but...
Yeah, which kind of... You don't want your Boros Reckoner blocked by 2 creatures then.
But it still adds you 3 devotion, so you're going to be getting... In your red-white deck, you're going to curve your 1 into your 2 into your Boros Reckoner. You're going to drop this guy, and he's going to be... Is that active? What's that?
Yeah, it'll be... Well, it depends what your 1 and 2 drops are, but it should be 3, 4, 5...
Well, that's 6 plus 2 is 8. So, yes, they'll be active. Even if your 2 drop has only got 1 red or 1 white, it'll be active.
Yeah. I mean, and since the white drop, there are a lot of double white drops out there. Or what?
Double red, too.
Precinct Captain, is that? No, what is it?
That's 1 white. No.
No, Precinct is 2.
I'm thinking Soldier of the Pantheon, sorry.
2 whites out there. I mean, there are a couple cards like that could work.
So, odds are he's going to be... A creature.
He's got I think he's got a likelihood of being a creature.
And I mean, those 2 abilities are really good abilities for a deck that just wants to attack.
Yeah, wants to get through, because basically for every creature you have, they need to have 2.
Yeah, again, this is just a card that if you get it in limited, wow.
If you get it in limited.
Good luck, people. Good luck.
Yep. So unless I wouldn't be surprised if we see some more enchantment, I guess, exile effect in this block than we've seen in any other block so far, just knowing what the rough storyline is going to be in this set.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've gotten, 1 exile effect in each set? We've got Revoke and the green one. Any others? So if we only get 1 here...
Yeah, but, I mean, knowing that this is probably going to be Theros overthrowing gods, since it's following a classic myth storyline, we're probably going to have some more things that deal with these enchantments.
I know one of the cards specifically deals with non-enchantments, and it's...
Oh, yes.
Extinguish All Hope is the mono-black control sweeper spell that they've already spoiled for this. It's 4/2 black for sorcery speed sweeper. It destroys all non-enchantment creatures. So black finally gets a sweeper, but it doesn't touch enchantments. So you can play all enchantments in mono black and then sweep the opponent's board?
Hey, there is Herald of Torment.
There's a lot of things.
That's a black enchantment creature that could survive it.
There's Night Howler. There's a Minotaur that they've already spoiled that's a Bestow Minotaur.
Yeah, but is anyone horrible. Actually going to play him?
No, there's the...
Can we talk about playable cards here? I'll be the dupes.
Okay. Well, honestly, one that will still survive, though not an enchantment, is Lotleth Troll. It's black-green.
I mean, you'd have to pay the extra black. Now it's a 7-mana sweeper.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yep.
But, I mean, I think even a card that said 6-mana, destroy all creatures, period, I don't even know if that would see play, never mind this conditional one. I'm not excited about this, although the art is kind
of
neat.
But I like 2/3 of the art on this card. I have issues with the Phoenix. His mask looks weird, and his cloak's not up, which bugs me.
I think the worst part is all the people who are expecting Damnation are just like cursing Wizards now because we got this pile instead of
the actual card that Damnation. They've been
looking to get reprinted. But it kind of makes sense. Like Damnation would be really powerful, and as we've talked about earlier in the standard section, Black is doing just fine.
And one thing I would like to point out, at least from an interesting story point, if you see it on this, and I think you also see it on, what's the card? The Dictate of Twin Gods, is that the gods themselves seem to be missing the Nyx, the infused star background. You don't really see it in Irois and Mogis in their fight, and you don't see it in Phoenix, Erebus, and Farika.
Yeah.
So there might be a storyline hint of that. And Krufix doesn't count. Krufix is just a star background.
It's just
full disclosure, at least Krufix is
Krufix,
still
we don't really know what Krufix is yet. So Krufix I can exclude and still keep my sanity.
Is he like the glue that holds all the gods together?
He's something. We'll find out.
So, kind of along the storyline of things killing gods, which is what this set is about, yep. Elspeth is, or was, in Theros, and the new kind of weapon that she gets is Godsend, which is
It's not a new weapon.
It's not?
It's her weapon. Oh. Okay, so I am way too interested in backstory of all this stuff, so I actually read the ebook that came out with this, and so apparently this is Porphyros made the sword, and when Elspeth ended up on Theros, it fell from the sky because Porphyros was fighting Heliod, and she sees it, and Heliod comes to grab it, and she sees Heliod as it's scared and flees and grabs the sword. When she returns, Heliod realizes the sword is back. And so, because they always said Heliod's spear, he converts it to the spear.
Wait. Isn't this the same sword, though, that Elspeth has had this entire time?
It's the same one.
So she started on Theros?
No, when she first planeswalk from wherever she was being.
She went to Theros first.
Yes.
Grabbed the sword.
Found the
somehow
sword.
Somehow ended up back on Theros. Why did she go back? Is there any logic to that?
She went back to Theros because she remembered the gods, and she thought the gods could protect from, you know, how destruction seems to fall. That's wherever she goes.
Yeah,
she was hoping the divinity could protect her, but the gods turned out to be, you know, real douchebags, so.
Well, I mean, I think that's cool because, like, Elspeth's background has been something that people have been kind of hoping to get more information of, if I remember correctly, from reading forums. So that's kind of cool that they tied it into Theros. Yeah, but let's talk about the actual card.
Okay, yeah.
So like Ford was saying, it's kind of the same as Heliod's spear a little bit. It's an equipment this time around. It's 1 and 2 white for a legendary equipment. The enchanted creature, not enchanted creature, but the equipped creature gets +3/+3. For an equip cost of 3, which is kind of steep. The main kind of trick to it, though, is that whenever the equipped creature blocks or is blocked by one or more creatures, you get to exile one of them. And then kind of the next step in that is that your opponents cannot cast cards that have the same names as ones that were exiled using this effect. So it's, you know, it's a decent pump. It's a, you know, it's a +3/+3, which is not something too small. It's going to make anything into kind of a threat. But I think the main thing here is that if you're going to be blocking with this creature or, you know, attacking with it, if your opponent wants to block, it's going to lock him out of a creature, and it's going to kind of put him in a hard spot. It's going to always going to be removing the creature, kind of like with what Spear was doing when creatures attacked. You could remove them after they did damage to you. So I really like the flavor of the card. It looks great.
Yeah. This doesn't even have to deal damage, and if a white base deck becomes anything that plays this card, it's going to utterly destroy probably the green-red monsters deck and Jund monsters deck, because there's just so little removal, I guess, that can actually hit.
Yeah, but they have so many threats. Their threats are so diversified that...
There are three threats. Pelucranos, Storm Breath, and the Gorgon that I can never remember the name of.
Yeah, but they can always just throw...
Rapper of the Wilds, as John would call it.
They can always throw a Xenagos the Planeswalker down and make a 2/2 Satyr every turn block with, which is not... You know, that's something the deck already does, so I don't see it
also,
being
green
too much.
Red is the home of artifact destruction. I mean, there's the one red, one green, destroy target artifact or enchantment, deal 2 damage. And it's already in sideboards.
It is?
And,
I guess.
People use it for detention sphere. I've seen it in sideboards. I don't know its actual prevalence because I'm not a huge fan of that deck. But I've seen it play already.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as we see more artifacts and enchantments, I don't know if this spear is actually going to see all that much play, except for maybe some sideboard. It does take a lot of mana to actually equip.
It gives...
You know, and it's only good against certain decks. I mean, this is not an all-star card against control decks.
Or black.
Yeah, or black decks where, like, you just keep equipping your creatures, wasting 3 mana instead of playing a new creature and just, you know, get it destroyed anyways.
But it gives a reach that white aggro decks probably didn't have before.
I think it could see the sideboard play against other creature decks. It could make a huge difference there.
Yeah.
And I think another important thing to remember is that this ability doesn't target. So, like, your opponent can't just block with his Blood Baron.
Or, like, I guess...
You just exile him as soon as he's declared as a blocker. Same thing with kind of Storm Breath Dragons and other things. So, I mean, it's something to keep in mind. I don't know how good that ability will end up turning out be. We haven't seen equipment in a while in Magic and Standard, really. So it's good to see at least one, but who knows if it's effective.
I mean, I think the last Mythic equipment we saw was War and Peace and Batterskull.
We had Elbrus.
We had Elbrus.
Blade. Oh, God, I forgot about that.
I mean, there was equipment in Innistrad. A lot of it just did not do anything.
I forgot the freaking blade creature.
Although, to be honest, one of John's favorite cards from Innistrad happens to be in equipment, so I'll let him talk about that briefly.
I'm going to look up the name while I tank and check this out. I forgot. Good. It's what? It's Rune Chanter's Pike.
I kind of forgot. I know what it is.
It's Rune Chanter's Pike.
The Delver thing.
So that goes back to our good talk about Delver, how it was such a powerful one drop in every format, including its time in Standard.
Another card I never played when it was Standard, just by sheer protest.
So does anybody have any more of the spoiler cards they want to talk about? I think we've talked a bit about these. We've gone a little long.
Does anyone want to talk about the one other god that showed up?
Keranos? I'll touch on him real quick. So... Okay. Oh, my browser just freaked out. Oh, Keranos. He's a 6/5 god. He's the blue-red one. So he costs 3, a blue and a red. Again, he's got the indestructible, needs 7 devotion. His ability is freaking awesome. My favorite one so far for the gods.
The 2 there, Ben.
Yeah.
Or are you talking all?
I'm talking about all of them. He's just awesome. You reveal the first card you draw on each of your turns. Whenever you reveal a land card, you get to draw a card. And whenever you reveal a non-land card, Keranos deals 3 damage to a creature or a player. So every turn you're either drawing an extra card or you're lightning bolting something, which is blue-red as hell, and it's awesome, and I love it, and I want to play it, and I'm probably going to play it with stupid Constellation Magoo.
Pre-release, right?
Oh, it's going to be so good. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited for Keranos. I'm excited for Eidolon of Blossoms.
I'm excited for the new Ajani, even though I have no idea what it does yet.
Yeah. Jamie, do you have any other cards you want to talk about?
No, I think we actually did a large chunk of them, and there'll be plenty more over the next coming weeks for us to get all excited about and then find out they're all duds.
Yep. Especially
but the excitement is the important part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, once Tubes gets back, he'll tell us just how wrong we are about all these cards. How none of it.
Don't jinx it. Maybe he'll say a card's good. We'll roll with that.
Well, I mean, most of these cards, again, they're exciting because they're new, but in reality, I don't think many of these cards, even the ones we talked about, none of them stand out as, like, must-play, you know, standard constructed playables. I can see some of them seeing some play. Hopefully we may be wrong and we might see something cool and unique, remember, but who knows?
No one really thought much about Courser Crucifix when it was spoiled and born, and now basically any green creature deck runs him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the fun of the excitement. There's room to explore and play with, and that's why, you know, we love Magic and opening packs.
It all comes back full circle.
We're all just addicted to that.
So I think that's about going to wrap it up for us tonight. It's been a little long. Normally we don't go this long, but we've had a lot to talk about, especially with new cards. It's always fun. Again, as usual, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at coalitionvictorymtg@gmail.com. That's the name of the show, mtg@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at VictoryCast, and you can also follow our personal Twitter accounts, which I list in the show notes all the time. We haven't been streaming as much as we used to.
I like how you say we, when really the only person here who actually streams on this podcast right now is you.
Toops.
I want to stream. I'm still trying to set it up.
Toops streams, but he's not actually in the podcast tonight.
Nah, that's so. Okay. But you guys join me whenever I've streamed. Yeah. I know Jamie's jumped in the stream with me. Ford, you're always there in the chat. So it's good to have the whole team. Even if you guys are not visible, you guys are definitely heard and your thoughts are there. You're there in spirit.
Oh, yeah.
So
just I have no control when it's actually started.
Yeah, so I'll put the links to the streams in the show notes as well. So if one of us starts streaming again, I should just stream Diablo. I don't know why I haven't, but That's another podcast. But thanks again to you guys for tuning in again. Thanks to the co-host tonight for dealing with the skeleton crew and still going longer than we normally do.
Is that a magic card? Skeleton crew?
Skeleton crew? It might be.
There's a skeleton, like, pirate ship.
I believe it's just called skeleton pirate ship? Pirate?
I don't think that's the actual name.
No, there's a card called pirate ship.
There is a pirate ship. I love how we get so off topic.
Yay, ABB for the win.
Skeleton crew. No, there's no card called Skeleton Crew. Not yet.
There's a skeleton warship or something.
Why warship?
If you know of any cards that have skeletons and or ships, you can email us your favorite skeleton card. That's a good one. Let's do that. Email us your skeleton card.
Literally skeleton ship.
Is that what it's called?
From Ice Age.
Oh, what a lovely set.
And it has a dolphin in the picture.
Okay.
Oh, send us your favorite skeleton ship card. Yay.
Yes. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Have a good one.
Night.
Good night.
Holy crap, there is an actual dolphin in it.
And a turtle, I believe.
There's two. They're like, well, there's a skeleton riding a turtle!